approached by the board of directors for the Fraga-Moorhead Community Theater last October. They were putting on the 20th anniversary of the Laramie Project, and they approached me and asked me to write a poem as a reaction piece to the FMCT production of the Laramie Project. And I hadn't seen the Laramie Project before, but I was very well aware of the play. And so I said, absolutely, I'm in. I would love to do this. And so I spent a good week at the dress rehearsals, talking to the actors, the director, the people involved in the production, as well as seeing the play come to fruition. After that, I had about a week to write the poem and as this reactionary piece. And I was nervous. This was the first time I was nervous about writing a poem, because this was in response to a real life event that happened in Laramie, Wyoming. And I wanted to not only do justice to the play, but also to the members of the cast, to the crew, to the real life people that were involved in this project 20 years ago. So I was very aware of how important this piece was going to be. I wanted to do the right thing and not just focus on the work, but focus on the emotions, because it's a poem. My poem is called Vision, and it's a reaction to this production of the Laramie Project. I wrote the poem in about a week. It was a very emotional process, because I was sitting in this theater, and I was not only seeing a piece of art being performed, but also this is a true story. This is a real event that happened, and I really just wanted to be immersed into that process. So I sat, and the first night I was at one of the dress rehearsals, I just sat and experienced it. I didn't take any notes. I didn't do anything. I just wanted to just be there and experience it. And then after a while, during breaks, I would start writing things down and taking notes, and then having a couple of very short interviews with the cast and crew, seeing how they were reacting to their own experience with the play, as well as with the message of the life of this young man taken brutally in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. And I just sat there and I just started writing after a couple of days. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and I couldn't get that out of my head. It was a very emotional, visceral process. And at the end, I ran it by a couple of people that I trust very well, and one of them being my dad. He's he's one of the people I go to, because he's not afraid to say, I'm not sure if this really makes sense here, or maybe this is a different poem, and which he did say. It's like, maybe this piece doesn't quite fit here. Okay, thank you. I need that feedback, especially since this is a poem that's being commissioned. I mean, I want to do right by everyone involved. And I finished the poem, and I read it to the crew, to the cast and crew after the final dress rehearsal, and I was in tears, bawling while I was reading this poem, because it was so, I felt like it was so honest and it was so real, and it wasn't just respecting the Laramie Project, the play, but also everyone involved. So, and everyone there was crying, and it was painful and wonderful all at the same time. After that, I put it away for a while, because I was thinking, well, it's lovely, and maybe I'll publish it in print, maybe not. I'm not sure. It was up to me what I wanted to do with it, because I got that answer right away. I said, what are the stipulations to this? Does this still belong to me? Does it belong to the theater? How does it work? It was all still my property. So I came across the North Dakota Human Rights Arts Festival, there was a call out for artists, for all kinds of artists, to visual art, spoken word art, print poetry, video, you name it. They were all inclusive. All different types of art were being collected for this arts festival, the second annual North Dakota Human Rights Arts Festival. And I said, why not? This poem vision fits in with human rights, and we'll see how it goes. And I was thrilled to learn that it was accepted into the festival. And I was floored, because I had no idea that it was possible for me to be a part of a festival. This was my first festival. And oh my gosh, I'm in the festival. This is my work. My poem is in a festival. And so the festival traveled from Fargo to Bismarck and then to Grand Forks. And I learned at the end of the festival, it was a juried festival, so there were awards for, I believe it was for, there was for best painting, work of written work, visual art. There were so many different awards, and I learned that my poem Vision won best performance piece in the North Dakota Human Rights Arts Festival. And I'm still amazed. I'm so thrilled that this poem that I was commissioned to write, and that I put so much heart and soul into, because I wanted to get it right, and now it's the winner of a festival. I'm beyond excited and beyond honored to be able to represent myself and FMCT and the Laramie Project and just my work. I'm just beyond excited about that.
Over the years in this theater, seat BH12 has earned its lumps, its creaks, and its creases. And as I scan the program, I read of the plot and the actors. I see a single set with movable chairs, and I know from experience, waiting backstage, 100 familiar characters are breathing deeply, and ready or not, the show will go on. I will notice the blinking house lights calling places for the audience. House lights will fade to half, followed by a sound cue, an announcement, and blackness. Lights up. Go. I have been gifted an extra set of eyeglasses. Not glasses that help me read or see the road as I drive in the rain, but glasses that shield my sight. I do not mourn this lack of sight. It keeps me innocent. It keeps me from knowing the world is against me. Perhaps I have inherited this naivete from my father, who raised me to find the good first and then see the hard as pain, as struggle. My breath catches as I witness the fence, the buck fence. The buck fence is upstage left. The buck fence could be used as a metaphor for distance from truth, maybe. In this case, though, the buck fence is not hyperbole or metaphor or simile. 20 years ago, the buck fence held a young man, 21, beaten, murdered, because he lived his true self. I wonder if this true self was too foreign to others, not because they were born that way, but because, as Hammerstein famously penned, you've got to be carefully taught. As the curtain falls, my head drops forward. My fingers pick the rose-colored glasses off the bridge of my nose. We could have been so healthy. Instead, why are we choosing fear, migraines, anger, and ulcers? It's any style of hurt to remind us we are still alive. Why must we not see the fly rehydrating from the dew of the banana leaf, or the notebook's overwritten pages, complete with folded corners, or post-it note-written textbooks? I mean, Sarah ate all her peas tonight. The car started. My pillows have cases on them. Water is dripping into the cat dish, and you can still smell Grandma on the Afghan 18 years later. What tint is embedded in the lenses that you wear? I suppose some evils share a red deeper than roses. Do you see the leaves or the weeds? Petals? Thorns? How low do you wear your ball cap? A darkened molded plastic protects your single set of eyes. Open them. Blink once or twice. Give your sight time to adjust. What will you see today? Shrubs or aphids? Pinto or manure? Infant or sin? I grew up seeing shrubs and all things green. I walk outside with my daughter. I see the doting grandparents eager to converse with her stuffed puppy dog and help her giggle at fart noises. I walk outside with my son, 8 inches taller than me, visually 24, socially 16. I know his muted, solitary stroll across the mall may evoke alarm. My chiropractor adjusts the stress from my neck and shoulders. Bones realign, air pockets pop, crunch, and I grunt from the good pain, the relief. I am so heavy. Fresh out of the ocean, full of sand and salt, I pry the rose-colored glasses from the bridge of my nose and place them in my pocket this time. I remember my first set of rose-colored glasses. I was 10. All of us, my sister, myself, my mom, and dad, drove to Dad's office 40 minutes away. We met a portly fellow outside the building. He wore a tattered white T-shirt, oversized jeans, and sneakers. A resident of the state hospital near downtown St. Louis. I squeezed Daddy's hand. It's okay, Muffy, he'd say. These folks aren't dangerous. They're just sick. Will I get a fever? Asked my sister. Nobody. Their illness is in the brain. They are not contagious. Our lenses are not all filtering. They help us notice at times how different is not always dangerous. Just when we hide behind those glasses, when we remove them from our coat pockets and don them on a cloudy day, when they become part of our daily costume, moment by moment, inch by inch, molecule by molecule, our lenses become less transparent. They filter deeper shades until all we see is black or white, left or right, all or nothing. As I reflect and refract from this representation of feeling and fact, the final curtain falls. My head collapses into my hands. My palms cover a muted scream, and I see 20 years after Laramie. After Matt, not much has changed. Except maybe now our stage whispers will carry further, carry longer, hold more clout and attention, and our staged personas will morph into full characters with faces and names and facts and fury. And for this reason, we stand sighted and sing.